J1.
Number 11A.
Consider together then the term soul. And as we know, this soul can be considered in the compendium number 6. And also I'd like to have you turn then to your illustrative material entitled Soul. Now, what we want to see are what are the divine facts that are symbolized by this term soul. Now, soul is a unique symbol which stands for divine being, and it stands in a unique way for divine being, and it is a symbol which symbolizes certain ideas which characterize reality. Now, on page 163 in the compendium is where we begin. And what we see when we turn to 163 is we encounter this major title, From Sense to Soul. So we have to ask ourselves the logical question, just what does this mean, from sense to soul? Now, in thinking it over, I think what we must do is to recapitulate for a moment. Now, I believe it was on the first night of talks, or maybe the second evening when we were together, we considered the synonymous terms, and we were aware of the fact that they appear in different orders and that they appear in different arrangements in science and health. And in front of you, you should have the illustrative material which shows the different orders of the synonymous terms as they appear in the textbook. And I want us to think this over together just a little bit further, because just to make sure that we have this clearly in mind what this means. Now remember, while we're studying the terms, that these orders are very definite, and it's always the purpose that determines the order. It's the purpose that determines which way these synonymous terms should be arranged. So on page 465, you see there that it's an answer to the question, what is God? So we encounter the arrangement of the terms in the order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Now, it's the purpose here we must always remember. Now, the purpose of this order is to define what is God. And therefore, this is why it's arranged in this order, because those terms in this particular order are in a way in which, if one goes from mind to spirit to soul to principle to life to truth to love, one then can, in a very systematic and ordered way, define what God is. So we see that this is a very definite thing, and therefore it explains what God is, or in biblical terms, it explains the Word of God in this particular order. Now, as we go on to page 115 in Science and Health, we encounter another order of the terms, and that is the order of principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. Now, the purpose of this order is stated in the title, which appears there on 115, and the title is The Scientific Translation of Immortal Mind. So here the purpose is not to define God, or it's not to define what the divine nature is, but the purpose is to show how that divine nature translates itself to a specific idea. So therefore, when we are speaking and we speak in the terms of principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind, this enables us to speak symbolically of how principle translates itself to the point of idea. So the purpose of that order is translation. Then we come to another order, which is on page 579, and this is in the Glossary of Science and Health. And we encounter then the order of principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. Now, this is the order of Christianity, as we call it, and the purpose of this order is to show what true reflection is. So, therefore, when we're speaking in the order of principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love, these symbols enable us to speak about what true reflection is, and it lets us talk about the office of Christianity. So we see that these orders are very definite, and they're in a very definite arrangement, and they enable us to speak about different categories in being. Now, I mention this because we must always be aware of what order we're working in. And we know now that the compendiums are written in the order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So then automatically we say, oh, well then the purpose of the compendiums is to explain our divine nature, or to explain what our true identity is. This is the purpose then of the compendiums. So I believe I may have mentioned before that it's advisable then to start with the mind compendium and then go to the spirit compendium, then to the soul, then to the principle, then to the life, truth, and love, because they're written in this order and they're written in a sequence. So as you study these terms, you begin to gain momentum as you study mind, and then that whole thread and concept is picked up in the spirit compendium and it's carried on in the soul and on to principle. You see, it's just a regular thread here that's working. So by the time we reach the love compendium, we have a logical explanation of what being is about. So this is how we should always study the compendiums then, especially when we now get into soul. We should always go back to mind and say, okay, now what have we learned? What has mind told us and what has spirit told us? Because soul, more or less, is going to tie mind and spirit in together and tell us what we've already been learning. So one just doesn't jump into soul and study it in isolation. One always goes back when you're studying to go back to what mind said and what spirit says, and then you see, oh yes, and then this is what soul is then saying, you see. So this is what we do, and this is why we always begin and say that mind as a symbol is teaching. You see, we go back and we pick it up in our study, and it's interesting when one studies, and I know when I study myself, it's just a very methodical type of studying. You just repeat and repeat and repeat over and over in your consciousness just basic facts until they really take hold. So we see then that mind as a symbol is teaching that the divine mind alone is the basis of reality, and that this divine mind is the only mind, and this divine mind is our mind, and that this divine mind is the power which forms the image. Now, it kind of leaves us here, you see. Now we come into another super symbol, we come to spirit, and it picks up the thread of thought and says, okay, now we've just said that the divine mind is the power that forms the image, and spirit as a symbol comes along and says, okay, now let's look at that image. Let's talk about that image for a moment. And then spirit looks at that image and says, oh yes, well, idea then is the true substance of that image. Or spirit as a symbol will say, well, that image or idea is diversified, it's classified, it's individualized, and that idea is always operating on a calculus. Spirit just comes in now and explains the image. And spirit, of course, will always say that it's our, because divine mind creates ideas, and mind leaves it at that. Spirit comes in and says, well, then it's our understanding that must separate ideas from illusions. And it's our understanding that enables us to focus just on ideas. So you can begin to see the movement here from mind to spirit. And as we do this, we see we can come and we can say then, okay, now where does soul come in the sequence of thinking? And what we come into then, the first heading on our illustrative material shows there that soul comes in and talks about from sense to soul. Now, the journey from sense to soul is really the journey more or less from mind to spirit to soul, or it's the journey, so to speak, from mainly with the accent of spirit to soul. From sense to soul is the accenting now. We're just leaving spirit And we're coming into the synonymous term soul as symbolically speaking. So, you see that step again. Mind is the power that forms the image. Spirit says idea is the true substance of that image. And soul says, and that's your true identity. You see, soul will just come in if mind says, mind is the power that forms the image, spirit says, idea is the true substance of that image, then soul comes in and says, and that's your true identity. It ties those two together. Now, soul also is a mainly in there trying to establish then our true identity in being. And then picking up, let's take again that step from spirit to soul. You see, spirit says you must separate ideas from illusion. And soul says if you use that process of separation, if you're always separating ideas from illusion, that must become your established rule in life. And if that becomes your established rule in life, then your true identity will appear. So if one is constantly separating ideas from illusions and makes that their established rule in life, then that enables your true identity to appear. This is what soul is saying. Now, this step from spirit to soul, the step from separating ourselves from false beliefs and focusing only on ideas so our true identity can appear, has been symbolized in many different ways in the Bible. And I really feel that it's necessary sometime to go back to biblical statements, because one should know what the Bible's teaching, because especially today when one encounters young people. I know this summer I was in California and met a young girl about 17 years old who was very much into the Bible and would bring the Bible out and quoted the Bible for about an hour to me. And it was just lucky, you know, that I knew a few passages from the Bible in a scientific way to be able to help her along a little bit. You know, if we just feel that the Bible is old and throw it out, this isn't right. Because it's teaching very, very up-to-date things, but it's teaching it in its symbols, you see. But we must know that it isn't old any more than science and health is old, because it's a science, it states scientific facts, but we always have to go back and reinterpret those symbols and bring them up into modern terminology. Now, that first biblical example that we could take from the step from spirit to soul, the step from separating ourselves from false beliefs and focusing only on ideas so then our true identity appears. This can be shown in the 3,000 year of Bible history. And you know, this is that period where the children of Israel came out of Egypt and they were wandering for years in the wilderness. Now, it was during this period of wandering, we say wandering in the wilderness, that we know that they were dropping step by step all of their false beliefs about God. This is symbolized then by our synonymous term spirit today. This period of wandering in the wilderness where they were dropping off their false beliefs, we use this term spirit now to designate that state of wandering and separation. The Bible said it was wandering in the wilderness. Now then, as the children of Israel detached themselves from all their erroneous beliefs and concepts, they were then able to enter into the promised land. Now, in other words, we know that this is a biblical symbol, which means that they were then able to come into the realm of their true identity. So, instead of saying today wandering in the wilderness, we say use the symbol spirit to mean separating from false beliefs. And instead of saying coming into the promised land, we use the symbol soul, which means that we're coming into the realm of our true identity when we detach from false beliefs. So you see, that particular example is something which we can use today. Another example from the Bible that talks about this step from spirit to soul is the one you know about the tares and the wheat. The parable about the tares and the wheat. And I'm sure you all know how it goes, but you know, at first that one cannot tell the difference between the good seed and the bad seed. But actually it was when the seed grew that one began to tell the difference between the tares and the wheat, and it became more and more apparent which were the tares and which were the wheat. Now actually this is the period then of spirit where one can discern the difference between the real and the unreal, the difference between the tares and the wheat. This is the tone then of spirit. Now at the harvest we know that the tares were bound into bundles and burned, and the wheat was gathered into the barn. Now here we have the step from spirit to soul. We have at the harvest then all false beliefs or the tares were annihilated, and then only the divine ideas or the wheat were gathered into the barn. Then only the divine ideas became one's true identity. We have another symbol here, which is just the same, talking about the step then from spirit to soul, is the symbol that one has in the days of creation. And we know how that first day of creation says, let there be light, or let the divine mind create ideas. This is symbolized today by mind. And then we know that the second day says, let there be a firmament, and this is today symbolized by spirit, or let there be separation. And then we comes into the third day, which we use today the symbol of soul, but the third day in the Bible says, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear. So here we have this step from spirit to soul. It says, let the waters be gathered together unto one place. This is after one has gone through the firmament of separation. Then we have the waters gathered into one place. That means then we come and we focus on just ideas. We have then the tone of spirit. And as we focus on ideas and the waters, so to speak, are gathered into one place, then the dry land appears. Then our true identity appears. So it's good to know when these young people come along and talk to us about, you know, the tares and the wheat, and they talk to us about wandering in the wilderness in order to reach the promised land, and the tares and the wheat that are then gathered into the barn, or they'll talk about having a firmament in order that the dry land appears. This is just saying the same thing over and over, and teaching, of course, the step from spirit to soul. Now, these Bible lessons which we see are talking about laws and lessons which are mandatory and law. Now, these lessons then of mind to spirit and now into soul that we've been studying over the last few weeks are mandatory and they are law. And we see that, and we have seen together, that mind's will is mandatory, and it's law, that there's just the one mind, and that will of that mind must be fulfilled. It's law. Therefore, because that mind's will is mandatory and law, we have seen that only divine ideas unfold, only divine ideas reach fulfillment, therefore the necessity to focus just on ideas, and then we come into soul then that says if we focus on those true ideas, then our true identity will appear. Do we see that just natural unfoldment here from mind to spirit to soul? Now, what we must see is that this is mandatory in law. This isn't something that just a nice little thing that the Bible is teaching. It isn't a nice little symbol system that Christian Science is teaching. But we must see that this is absolutely law in that it's happening in the world today. And this is why I'd like to now take a few moments just to focus on the world today and to see if the world is obeying this law of mind, spirit, and soul. Let's see if the world is actually coming into the realm of spirit and seeing that it must separate from false beliefs in order to find its true identity. And this is something that as we read the various books that are coming out in the world today, we see this is just the law that the world is obeying, because we begin to see more than ever today, the world has always separated from false beliefs in search for truth, but it seems like with this knowledge explosion and the multiplication of information, that everything becomes more apparent. False beliefs are falling away faster than they have in the past. The world image changes quicker than it did in the past. So the world comes out then of these false beliefs, and it finds its true identity. And we can see in the world then this process of separation is becoming an established rule. Now, we can ask ourselves, what are some of these false beliefs that the world is separating away from? What are some of these erroneous concepts that the world breaks away from in order to find its true identity? And we begin to see that we're actually at a brink in world history where the separation process then is in a very strong rate. It's happening very quickly, like I just mentioned, because of the knowledge explosion. There's so much information. There's the communication. Actually, it has so much to do with communication. One of the recent Scientific American magazines has been devoted just to the subject of communication. And it shows how this whole explosion of communication has fed information to the world, and the feedback is so terrific that one can immediately make a mistake, so to speak, in a field, and it's immediately then corrected. So we can say then, what are these false beliefs that are being dropped away from in the world today in order that the world can find its true identity? And as I mentioned, the world is just on the brink, I really feel, of finding really reality, what reality is. Now, just to mention a few basic things, and I mentioned just the basic ones because this helps us with our study. As we have seen in physics, we went over this the last session together. We have seen that step by step, the physicists begin to drop off their limited physical beliefs. Now, step by step, as we have seen, they first dropped off that very primitive belief that matter is a solid stuff substance. They have dropped off that belief that matter exists per se, and that matter exists by itself, or actually that matter is self-existent. And it was into a world we were born, actually, that believed that matter was solid stuff. And I think that in each of us individually, as we were growing in science or growing in our concepts of physics, had a kind of a hard time at one time to say, gee, you mean this isn't real solid stuff, you know. It was a hard concept to break away from. But today, with Einstein's physics being taught more and more in the schools, and I think it probably is to a great degree even more than when we were going just through high school and the university, but today that equation of E equals MC squared, as we have seen, shows that matter is energy. So it's all a question of energy and whether it appears as a solid object that is just energy in its concentrated form, or whether it appears as light, we know that is just energy in its free-flowing form. But all is energy. And now, as we saw last week, the physicists have taken another step, and the physicists say today, well, then, that energy is a product of the mind. And this is a bold step. I wouldn't say that every physicist will declare this, but it's being seen, and more you see them saying that energy is the product of the mind. Now, we come into the field of medicine. And we see now what is actually happening in a big comprehensive way in the field of medicine. We see that the medical practice begins to rely less and less, so to speak, on drugs, relatively speaking, on drugs to heal a patient. And we begin to see that many medical practitioners begin to rely more and more on the patient's own mentality to heal. The medical practitioners really rely quite a bit today on the patient's mentality to heal. And this brings us into this whole field then of psychosomatic medicine. And psychosomatic medicine takes mental considerations largely into consideration. mental factors, largely into consideration. And also this field of homeopathy takes mental factors largely into consideration. And it's in, the field of homeopathy that we have the use of the placebo. And we've mentioned this, I'd be in class before, about how the placebo then is just a drugless drug, and that this placebo is given to the patient. And a very knowledgeable and outstanding Seattle physician, or actually he's a doctor, I understand he has many degrees, but he's one of the top pathologists at Group Health here in Seattle. He mentioned to me that today about 50% of the drugs which are given to the patients are placebos. That means that many of the medical practitioners are relying 50% in their cases for the patient to heal themselves, and that they give them a drugless drug. The patient believes he's getting a drug, but actually there is no drug in the drug. It's to humor the patient, and the patient gets well because he has faith in the drug and faith that he will be healed. So that's quite a big percentage today to have going to placebos. And they even, a recent seminar came up, I even think it was as high as 50%, they said, of accidents, of broken bones, that it was in the mental state of the person before they had an accident which caused a broken bone, etc. That this mental factor is coming very much into the consideration of medicine. So we see medicine then in physics becoming less and less materialistic and placing more emphasis on the mind. Now, what about philosophy? That's another realm of study in the world today. And we also see that the modern philosophers are becoming less and less materialistic, and they're placing more and more the accent on mind or on consciousness. Now, just in a very quick summary of philosophy, just to touch on it very quickly. We know that Descartes, who was a French philosopher in the 17th century, divisioned the universe into two opposing realities. Descartes absolutely said that there was mind and that there was matter, and that there was conscious thought then and inert matter, and they never mixed. And he just absolutely felt that they existed in their own realm. Now, Descartes divisioned the universe very strongly into mind and matter. And after Descartes came along in the 17th century, all the philosophers were trying then to rectify what Descartes said, and they were always trying to work around Descartes' statements in some way. Until finally Kant, who was a German philosopher in the 18th century, began to break away from this strong division of the universe into mind and matter. And Kant reasoned that mind, which he called the noumenon, gave form to the experience world, which he called the phenomenon. So therefore, he said that mind gave form to the experience world. So he actually placed the emphasis on mind. Now today, in the 20th century, we have the philosopher Sartre, who is a French philosopher, and he's today's leading existentialist. Now, Sartre says, and in many of his writings in different places, you'll see that he places emphasis on the fact that that consciousness is man's world, and that it constitutes his only world. And he says that ultimate reality is consciousness itself. And he says that since this is all we have, that this is the only thing man can rely on is consciousness, then this is the way man exists, as consciousness. So we have then in philosophy the accent on consciousness today.